Chapter 3. During the years of their last separation, his libertinism had remained essentially as implacable as before. But sometimes the score of lovemaking would drop to once in 4 days, and sometimes he would realize with a shock that a whole week had passed in unruffled chastity. The series of exquisite harlots might still alternate with runs of amateur charmers at chance resorts, and might still be broken by a month of inventive love in the company of some frivolous women of fashion. There was one red-haired English virgin, Lucy Manfriston, seduced June 4, 1911, in the walled garden of her Norman manor and carried away to Fialta on the Adriatic, whom he recalled with a special little shiver of lust. But those false romances only fatigued him. The indifferently plumbed Palazzina would soon be given away. The badly sunburnt girl sent back, and he would need something really nasty and tainted to revive his manhood. Upon starting in 1922 a new life with Ada, Vaughn firmly resolved to be true to her. Save for a few discreet and achingly draining surrenders to what Dr. Lena Veen has so aptly termed onanistic voyeurism, he somehow managed to stick to his resolution. The ordeal was morally rewarding, physically preposterous. As pediatricians are often cursed with impossible families, so our psychologist presented a not uncommon case of subdivided personality. His love for Ada was a condition of being, a steady hum of happiness unlike anything he had met with professionally in the lives of the singular and the insane. He would have promptly plunged into boiling pitch to save her, just as he would have sprung to save his honor at the drop of a glove. Their life together responded antiphonally to their first summer in 1884. She never refused to help him achieve the more and more precious, because less and less frequent, gratification of a fully shared sunset. He saw reflected in her everything that his fastidious and fierce spirit sought in life. An overwhelming tenderness impelled him to kneel suddenly at her feet in dramatic yet utterly sincere attitudes, puzzling to anyone who might enter with a vacuum cleaner. And on the same day, his other compartments and sub-compartments would be teeming with longings and regrets and plans of rape and riot. The most hazardous moment was when he and she moved to another villa, with a new staff and new neighbors, and his senses would be exposed in icy, fantastic detail to the gypsy girl poaching peaches or the laundry woman's bold daughter. In vain he told himself that those vile hankerings did not differ in their intrinsic insignificance from the anal pruritus which one tries to relieve by a sudden fit of scratching. Yet he knew that by daring to satisfy the corresponding desire for a young wench, he risked wrecking his life with Ada. How horribly and gratuitously it might hurt her, he foreglimpsed one day in 1926 or 27, when he caught the look of proud despair she cast on nothing in particular, before walking away to the car that was to take her on a trip in which, at the last moment, he had declined to join her. He had declined, and had simulated the grimace and the limp of Podagra, because he had just realized what she, too, had realized, that the beautiful native girl smoking on the back porch would offer her mangoes to Master as soon as Master's housekeeper had left for the film festival in Sindbad. The chauffeur had already opened the car door when, with a great bellow, Vaughn overtook Ada, and they rode off together, tearful, voluble, joking about his foolishness.
"It's funny," said Ada. "What black, broken teeth they have hereabouts. Those Bliadushki, Ursus, Lucette in glistening green, subside agitation of passion, Flora's bracelets and breasts, the whelk of time."
He discovered that a touch of subtle sport could be derived from constantly fighting temptation, while constantly dreaming of somehow, sometime, somewhere, yielding to it. He also discovered that whatever fire danced in those lures, he could not spend one day without Ada, that the solitude he needed to sin properly did not represent a matter of a few seconds behind an evergreen bush, but a comfortable night in an impregnable fortress, and that, finally, the temptations, real or conjured up before sleep, were diminishing in frequency. By the age of 75, fortnightly intimacies with cooperative Ada, mostly Blitzpartien, sufficed for perfect contentment. The successive secretaries he engaged got plainer and plainer, culminating in a coconut-haired female with a horse mouth who wrote love notes to Ada. And by the time Violet Knox broke the lackluster series, von Veen was 87 and completely impotent.